Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, the Reverend Marlon Jones, pastor of St. Luke AME Church in Waco, as well as founder and executive director of Indigi Leaders. This conversation was recorded August 11th, 2020, in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley, talking today with the Reverend Marlon Jones, pastor of St. Luke AME Church, founder and executive director of Indigi Leaders.
Correct, Indigi Leaders.
And I've got a list of other things here. Indigi Leaders, of course, that's a leadership training for African-American high school students. Is that essentially what it is?
And, yes,
it,
yeah.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I want to do that. You're also now working with STARI, which I'll ask you about that as well. It's counseling, nonprofit counseling service.
Yeah, and the particular program that I'm working with, I'll be serving as the director of fatherhood services, and our goal is to strengthen fathers and male caregivers, and as we do that, make families stronger.
And you've just started there, but you also mentioned to me that you're working with Change Waco, and I want to get to all of these things, at least enough to know what's going on with you in just a little bit. But why don't we start by asking a little bit about yourself. You have a family?
I do. I am wonderfully married to Cherie Jones, who is actually an educator here in Waco. She teaches English at Tennyson Middle School, and we have four wonderful children. They're wonderful most of the time.
like most children, wonderful yeah. Most of the time. How did your background growing up, how did that shape you into going into leadership roles?
Yeah, great question. I am originally from Kansas. I was born in Topeka, Kansas, and I think a little bit about the church that I grew up in will really tell the story. Growing up, I remember coming to church and seeing a lady play the piano, and I just remembered her as Sister Brown, who plays the piano. And then while in class one day, we were going through history, and I found out that Sister Brown was actually Linda Brown from Brown versus Board of Education. And she was actually the individual who played the piano at the church. And I think just being in an environment where justice was really promoted, it put me in an atmosphere, I think, that really developed me for the capacity for leadership.
You're a pastor.
Yeah.
Was that your first step? How did you step into leadership?
Yeah, not at all. So, growing up, I didn't see, ministry as my path. I think I had, the desire, like many young boys, I wanted to be a professional athlete in some sport. But, being 5'9", didn't really help me make it to the NBA. And so I think early on, the leadership roles I played were had a lot to do with sports. In high school, I was a part of the peer leadership groups where I got to work with other students. But I do think that when I did accept my call to ministry, it really did give me a different perspective about the way that I could lead and what leadership actually looked like.
So faith plays a role in?
Plays a major role. It shapes everything that I do. For me, there really is no separation. Everything that I do is shaped by my faith in the Lord.
Mm-hmm. How'd you come to Texas?
So I actually came to Texas by way of Paul Quinn College. I am a pastor in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and Paul Quinn is one of the colleges that the AME Church has. And as I was really starting to grow I was at a local community college back home in Kansas City, Kansas, and was ready to make a transition. And Paul Quinn felt like the right place. And it was, for me, a big move to come from Kansas City to Dallas, which was and is a lot larger city. But once I got on campus and got over being homesick, I think I met some really good people in terms of friends who are still friends to this day. And they were very involved, and it really caused me to level up. And we just began to kind of put our hands to the plow and start providing leadership.
And so eventually, after Paul Quinn, you went on to graduate school. You went to seminary.
I did.
And ended up at St. Luke here in Waco.
Yes. So that was the quick version. You know, it's a little bit longer than that, but it did. My wife and I, so when I first started seminary, my wife and I had, we didn't have any children. By the time I finished seminary, we had 4 children.
Wow.
And so I say a lot to say because I didn't go, you know, in 3 or 4 years and complete. It took me some time. And I finally completed my work at Bright Divinity School at TCU in 2016. I had been pastoring, during that time as well. But when I completed that, it really opened the door to be able to serve in some different capacities that has really been a blessing to my family and has really opened the door for me to provide leadership in ways that not having that credential, wouldn't allow. And unfortunately, we are living in a world where credentials matter. I think there are a lot of gifted individuals who might not have letters behind their name, and that is the only reason they haven't been allotted opportunities to serve. And so I do think that just having those credentials really helped to position me to be able to provide leadership in different ways.
Well, we're glad you made it to Waco. And we're glad for St. Luke that they called you to Waco or your bishop who sent you this direction. But that what you just brought up raises another question that I have. When you talk about leaders who don't necessarily have the letters behind their name, you founded an organization, Indigi Leaders.
Yes.
With the idea of developing leaders among youth.
Exactly.
Tell us about that.
So I have professionally worked in the field of youth development, and I enjoy it. I think Frederick Douglass most definitely had it right, that it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And as I work with youth in various capacities, I did see that there was something missing. And what I saw that was missing was programming geared specifically to African Americans. When I look at African Americans, I see them as what I call a special population. There are many programs geared to various special populations. And when you mention those programs, people usually don't bat an eye. But when you start to develop a program, as I have discovered, specifically for African Americans, for some reason, it seems to go against the grain. And I get the question a lot, why just African Americans? But the reality is there are situations and there are circumstances that African Americans experience that no other people group experiences. And so a program that really celebrates culture, a program that empowers and provides access to African American high school students, I believe is transformational, and I believe it is key to thriving communities.
This is not just a local organization.
No. And so we originally started the program in Fort Worth. When I was offered the opportunity to serve here in Waco, we also saw it as an opportunity to be able to bring the program here as well. And we were really excited. Believe it or not, we did our official launch for the program in at the end of February. We hosted a business over breakfast where we brought in an African-American millionaire. One of the things that we like to do is we like to expose African-American students to individuals who are successful outside of the arena of sports and entertainment. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we want them to be able to see that success can be obtained in other ways. And so we had a great initial launch, and then as soon as we launched, COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it has slowed us down just a little bit, but we are we're getting back on track. But I think, like everybody else, we are still waiting to see how the pandemic will play out, because that will determine, you know, how we move forward.
How many students are involved right now?
So right now we the program is
just starting.
It's just starting here in Waco, and we haven't moved forward because we're not sure what it will look like. The program has several components to it, and of course there are some times where we meet face to face. There are opportunities for relationship building with local professionals, and so there are many different parts to it. And so right now we are kind of in a phase where we're just trying to wait and see what's going to happen.
This is you mentioned pandemic, and of course it puts a lot of things on hold. But it seems like 2020 is one of those years where everything is happening at once. And another thing that is happening right now is I think we're seeing a time of real racial reckoning in this country and in our mm-hmm. community. And I'm just wondering about the timing of all this and if your organization and how you see things lining up there.
Yeah, I think what we are seeing play out is nothing new. I just think that the advent of cell phones, and you know, now we have photographers that can, you know, just simply pull a device out of their pocket, and we can have access to what has always been happening, and the stories just hadn't been believed. And even with video footage now, you know, it's still not enough to convince people that there is an issue. But I do think when we consider George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, whose names are just the latest names in a really horrific history, I really think it points to the need of a program like Indigi Leaders. It is part and parcel why the program was created, because we recognize that there are specific challenges facing the African-American community, not just issues with law enforcement, but you have issues of gentrification. You have issues of miseducation, and the list could go on and on and on. Issues of poverty, issues, you know, regarding health disparities. And these are very sensitive issues. And these are, you know, what we call wicked problems. These are not tame problems. They're not critical problems. They are not problems that you can just find one solution to. And so Indigi Leaders is an organization that seeks to build the capacity of African-American high school students to understand various problems and then be able to address them.
I went online and looked up Indigi Leaders. You've got a great website, by the way.
Thank you.
And there's some videos mm-hmm. there. So I watched the videos just to see kind of what the focus was of Indigi Leaders. And one of the things you just brought up yourself was gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
Is gentrification, I want to tie this to the development that's going on, just sort of a natural thing here in Waco right. as Waco develops. But also, from your point of view, is gentrification necessarily a bad thing?
And so I believe we have coined this term responsible gentrification. And so the idea that gentrification is a bad thing, I believe, is somewhat skewed. Gentrification needs to take place in communities that are deteriorating. The real question is, how does that gentrification happen? If it is from the outside and it is imposed, that gentrification can cause more harm than it can good. But if it is organic and individuals within a community are empowered to be that change and make that change, well, then you can have long-term sustainability. And that is what we promote.
Which takes having leaders grow up in the community and step forward as leaders rather than ideas coming from outside.
Exactly.
So, put you on the spot here a little bit. When you see the development that's going on in Waco, how would you evaluate that?
Yeah, and so when I look at the development that is going on in Waco, it is exciting, but it also causes some consternation. If you look at the growth that has happened in the city of Waco and even what the projections are saying, I think of Waco in the same light as a Las Vegas and in the same light as a New Orleans. If you are in those places as a visitor, they are great places. If you go to New Orleans and you are on Bourbon Street or hanging out in the French Quarters, you could have a great time. But for those who are living in Ninth Ward, it's a completely different experience. And it's the same thing in New Orleans. If you're going there, same thing for Las Vegas. It is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But when you live there, it's a completely different experience. And that is what I see happening here in the city of Waco. If you are able to be a part of kind of the boom that is taking place, great. But let's not forget about what's really going on in East Waco. I think there are some very shocking statistics that have been revealed regarding poverty. And I think it is 51% or more of those in the city of Waco who make under $25,000 a year are African American. Where is the economic growth there? It's just not there. And the reality is, we can't just look at the glam that's taking place. We still have to address the issues. And that is the whole idea behind Indigi Leaders. It is indigenous leadership. It is leadership that is born out of a community that sees the value of a community. Because often what happens is when African Americans get a measure of success, they will leave communities that they grew up in, and others will come in and see the value in that community and benefit from it. But we want individuals to see how valuable their communities really are.
Mm-hmm. For those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley. I'm talking today with the Reverend Marlon Jones, pastor of St. Luke AME Church. Something I didn't say, I'm just going to put it out there just so we don't forget it. Among the many things that you do, you also serve on KWBU's Community Advisory Council, and I so appreciate that. But you were just talking about, we've been talking about Indigi leaders, but you mentioned to me before we started that you're also working with Change Waco. What's your role there? What's going on?
Yeah, so I have been working with Change Waco for, I would say, about the past 3 months. After the murder of George Floyd, I began to reach out to city officials about starting a civilian review board that could help to provide some additional layers of accountability regarding law enforcement. And it was something that I was going at by myself. But I do believe you can accomplish much more working together. And Change Waco is a phenomenal organization with several different priorities, and one of which is being able to make sure law enforcement is held accountable. And so I begin working with them, and I am providing leadership to just one of the teams there. And what we have done, the team that I am working with, is we have looked around the state of Texas at all of the civilian review boards that are currently in place. And what we have discovered are best practices, and we have put together really a proposal and recommendation, and we'll actually be meeting with city officials this week to share that information with the goal of developing a civilian grievance review board here in the city of Waco that represents the civilians here that can actually provide another level of accountability regarding law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. And I would ask you specifics, but if you haven't made the presentation yet, I don't know how much you want to get into specifics.
Yeah, so we won't get too much. But what I will say is I have been in conversation with Mayor Deaver, and he has been wonderful in our times of discussion. And one of the things that we have ran into, and he has really helped to kind of provide some guidance, is that what other states are doing may not necessarily work in the country of Texas. You know, it is very specific, and so we have had to not just look at what people are doing across the country, but we've specifically had to look at what has been permissible according to the Texas legal code. And so we have put together a proposal that is in line with what is taking place throughout the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. Well, we look forward to seeing the outcomes of those discussions and where that goes. And as this program will likely air more than once, at some point we may be past that and have people be able to realize what you were talking about ahead of time there. Briefly, you were just started with Starry.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have a lot that you can report on that. It just seems like there's a lot on your plate that you take on, and you're talking about the fathership, the male leadership role that you're director there. What will that entail? What specifically does that mean for you?
So my goal will one to be an advocate for fathers. You know, I was speaking with our CPO yesterday, Jessica Kilpatrick, and she was just sharing one observation that really highlights how, really, as a culture, we call for fathers to step up, but then we really work against them. You know, for example, you know, if a father takes their baby to a restaurant and it's time to change that diaper, when the father goes to the restroom, guess what? No changing tables in the men's restroom, and there are just little things like that in some ways work against fathers. And so, one, being an advocate for fathers, and then two, helping fathers see that it's okay to get help. That I have four children, and I'll be the first to tell you I don't know it all. I am still learning. One of the things that amazes me about professional athletes. And it doesn't matter if you go to a basketball game, football game, baseball game. Before the game starts, you see these professional athletes doing warm-ups. I mean, doing some of the most basic things, layup drills, dribbling drills. And why is it that a professional athlete would need to do something so basic? It's because it's always important to sharpen your tools. It's always important to keep practicing. It's always important to do those things. And so starring has brought me on as the director of Fatherhood Services to build out our capacity to serve fathers, to help coach fathers, and support fathers so that we can have strong families.
Starry is not just a Waco organization.
No, it is not. Starry is part of several ministries under the umbrella of Children of Heart Ministries, and they provide counseling services and there are many different things that take place.
And just as I was not familiar with Starry, and so looked that up as well. This is something that is associated with the Baptist General Convention of Texas. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But it's a nonprofit in its own right.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be working beyond Waco. You'll be working, and of course, right now you're starting in the middle of social distancing.
Right, right.
Trying to set some things up.
So I'll be serving McLennan and Bell County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where do good ideas come from for leaders?
Listening. I think that good ideas come from having the humility to realize that that in their own way, everybody is a leader. You don't have to necessarily try to find problems or pain points. All you've got to do is just listen to people. I'll give you an example. I have been thinking about this upcoming school year. And as the school year starts, it's going to look, what we know is it's going to look very different than it has looked in the past. And I just wonder, you know, how many students will actually need backpacks? How many students will actually, you know, need, you know, pencil and paper? What students will probably need access to more than anything else is probably some type of technology. And so one of the things that I have talked to the leaders at my church about and reached out to the administrators at the schools in my community is, what would it look like, or would it be beneficial if we turned our church into a community hotspot where during daylight hours, individuals who don't have access to technology can just pull up to our church. They can park in front of the church. They can get in the parking lot and have access to good Wi-Fi. And then understanding that will probably help students, but it could help that person who says, you know what, I really am looking for a job, but I don't have access to it. And that is just being aware of where we are. So listening to people and being sensitive to what's taking place, I think it really gives birth to those ideas.
Mm-hmm. What's your vision for the future? And specifically, I'm looking at Waco, McLennan County. What's your vision for the future?
That's a great question. It's a great question. Specifically for Waco, McLennan County, I would love for it to be a place where everyone has equal opportunity. First, to be able to dream. I think that is, and it might seem understated, but poverty restricts your ability to dream. When you are worried about where is the next meal going to come from, you're not thinking about the possibilities of what the future holds. That is, I think, what my hope would be, that we could get to a place where every individual has the ability to dream. And then once they dream, they would have the resources to be able to actualize what they're dreaming.
It's a wonderful vision. Yeah. And we'll be watching for that with you over time as we go forward. The idea that we as a community will be in this with you together for that dream. We're out of time, really, and I wish we could talk longer, but it has been wonderful talking with you. We've been talking with the Reverend Marlon Jones, the pastor of St. Luke AME Church, the founder and executive director of Indigi Leaders, and I'm thinking we're going to be hearing more about that as time goes on as well. But I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the work that you do in making sure that we stay informed and aware. I really appreciate the work that you do.
Yeah. Thank you.
This conversation was recorded August 11th, 2020 in the KWBU studio.